Yesterday we spoke about the aims of the Bible study and the vital sequence to follow. Can anybody remember what that sequence was? Okay, there it is. The aims of Bible study are discovery of the facts in the Bible, understanding of their meanings and relationships, and then application, and the three types of application are remembering, doing, and using. So that's the vital sequence to keep in your mind all the time. Whatever sort of discussion you're leading, whether it's a Bible discussion or a discussion of a message somebody's given, it's discovery, understanding, and application. Each group discussion normally has three distinct parts. The opening of the discussion session, then the launching, guiding, and summarizing of its various phases, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment, and then the closing of the discussion session. Let's use another little illustration. Normally, in a Bible study, you open and close the discussion only once. Just in the order of things, you only open once and you only close once. Whereas you need to launch, guide, and summarize each phase of the discussion continually. Now, what I mean by a phase, there's a discovery phase in the discussion. Then there's an understanding phase. But in order to hit these phases, we have to launch questions. So whatever the phase, whether it's discovery, understanding, or application, we have to launch the question, then guide it, and then summarize it. So here it is. During each discussion, step by step, you open once, then you launch, guide, and summarize several times, and I'll be showing you an example of this in the study that you've done. And then you close only once. Now in the opening phase, this of course depends a lot on the group, but you would normally introduce the people to one another if there are any strangers, if there are any new people. Then you would aim at putting the group at ease, just with a few words of welcome, and maybe a little bit of informal conversation. And then you would introduce the people to the discussion. You'd give the purpose of the discussion. You'd say probably something like this. Tonight we're going to be discussing who is Jesus Christ. And then you would outline the method. We'll do this by first sharing and discussing what we've discovered from the Bible and then by applying it to ourselves. And then probably you would state the limits of the discussion. Since this is a Bible study, we'll accept the Bible as our final authority during our discussion. And then, probably still under the opening phase, you would pray. And I found if it's a new group under the opening phase, there are one or two things you can do to really put the group at ease. Like I'd go round, maybe the group of eight, and ask them just to share in a couple of sentences what their favourite hobby is, what they do to enjoy themselves. Or maybe in a group I led recently, a couple of months ago, and the members didn't know one another, I got them to share what they like for breakfast. You know, and there were eight people shared different things that they liked for breakfast. And, you know, what they liked, not what they got. And, it doesn't take much imagination to think of a simple question just to go around the group to put them at ease during that opening phase. If it's a new group, but of course, once the group know one another, that's unnecessary. And you would just, you know, put the group at ease with a few words of introduction each time. But you wouldn't develop it to any length. And so there's the opening session, then there's the launching, guiding, and summarizing each phase of the discussion. Does everybody incidentally have the little green Bible study with them? This one. And there's a handout that should be going out about now. Maybe we could get that out. While it's going out, let me explain how launching, guiding and summarizing on this second illustration relates to discovery, understanding and application. Here it is on another illustration. Now probably you can't all see that. There's discovery, understanding and application. That probably, in a normal study, would get repeated two or three times. Two or three times you would hit discovery, two or three times you would hit understanding, and maybe two or three times you would hit application, not necessarily. But under each time you hit discovery, you would launch, guide, and summarize that phase of the discussion. And each time you hit understanding, you would launch, guide, and summarize that phase of the discussion. And usually, each time you hit application, you would do the same. We'll be coming back on this, so if you don't understand it right now, we'll be discussing it later. But that's the pattern that you can repeat each Bible study. There will be the opening, of course, and the closing, which aren't shown on this illustration. Then the launching, guiding and summarizing of the discovery, understanding and application phases. How are we doing with this little illustration? Has everybody got one yet? There may not be quite enough to go around. Has anybody not got one? Tremendous. And maybe you could look at your study at the same time. Just using this study as an illustration, during the opening session I would probably read this out to introduce the people to the study. Either I'd read it out or I'd get somebody else to. Now in the sheet entitled Studies in Christian Living, Questions for Book 1, Chapter 1, there are four questions, four numbered questions, that is. Each numbered question is the discovery question. Then each question, just immediately under the discovery question, is an understanding question. And then I've grouped the application questions together right at the bottom. Now, a discovery question usually covers several questions. There are two ways you could do this. You could, assuming the group have prepared the study, you could get together and go through it question by question. What did you get for number one? What did you get for number two? But that's just repetitive of what they themselves have done in preparation. And it also becomes, after a while, rather boring. And so discovery questions are usually summary questions. Look at the first one there. How was Jesus like other human beings? And you'll see that that can be answered from questions 1 to 7. How was Jesus like other human beings? So suppose I was leading the study, and we'd been through the opening phase, people all knew one another, and then I'd introduce them to the study, and we'd maybe read this bit at the top. when we are introduced to another person, two questions often come to mind. Who is he, and what does he do? As we look into the Bible to learn about Jesus Christ, we may well ask these same questions. Jesus himself once asked his followers, "Whom do men say I am?" After they'd listed several wrong opinions, he turned and questioned them personally, "But whom say ye that I am?" The question was important then, and it's vital today. The answer is the foundation of the Christian faith and the reason for this Bible study. First, we consider the question, who is he? And in lesson two, what did he do? So I'd read that through, just in order to focus their attention on the study that we're going to be discussing. Then I would launch. I'd launch my first discovery question. That's up here. I'd launch my first discovery question, which is, how is Jesus like other human beings? Now, they can answer that from any of seven lesson answers. And I would look around the group. Well, how is Jesus like other human beings? And somebody would make a comment. Maybe, well, he grew hungry after being several days without food. And that comment would probably be made to me. And I'd still look around the group and say, well, what did somebody else discover? That would be guiding. Launching is asking the question, how is Jesus like other human beings? Guiding it is keeping it within the group. What did somebody else discover? And several comments would come out. You know, that he wept and was sorrowful when a friend died. That he was tired out after a long journey. That he was born in a normal manner. And that he grew and developed as other children do. So the discovery question is a summary of discovery question. It draws out under that particular section on the humanity of Christ what they've already discovered in their preparation. And maybe somebody would mention question three here, that Jesus grew and developed like other children. And I would see an advantage here in asking an understanding question at that point. You'll see on this sheet again, in parentheses at the top, that it's usually best to ask understanding questions where the word or phase to which they refer is first mentioned in the discussion. And so, as somebody mentioned question three and how Jesus grew and developed, I would ask what significance they saw in those four areas. It says that Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. Well, maybe they'd just written that down. And that's a pretty significant comment, and we'd want to develop their understanding on it. Or another understanding question would be, what does it mean that Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man? And of course, what we're trying to draw out is that Jesus developed physically, mentally, spiritually, and socially. That's pretty significant, and we want the group to know that. And most people just develop in two or three of those areas and either miss out on the spiritual development or maybe even on the physical or social development. But Jesus increased in these four areas. And I've often had a really profitable discussion around that. Now suppose I'd ask the question, how is Jesus like other human beings? And the first reply was, well, he grew and developed, as it says in Luke 2:52. Well, I would immediately go into the understanding question of what significance do you see in these four areas? And we'd discuss that for a bit. You see, I would launch that understanding question. What significance do you see in these four areas? Then I'd guide it and we'd discuss it. And then I'd probably summarize it. But I'd then go back to the discovery question. Well, how else was Jesus like other human beings? Throw it back into the group on the original topic. And keep guiding it. How else was he like other human beings? What did somebody else discover? And then when that had been exhausted, Incidentally, on this sheet, I've only put down a minimum of understanding questions to illustrate a point. You would find your own and develop other ones. Then I would summarize, or maybe if it was a well-established group, I'd get one of the group members to summarize what had been learnt as to how Jesus was like other human beings. And several things would be listed. And summarizing at the end is usually a good bridge to the next understanding question. To the next discovery question. And so I go into question two here. How was Jesus different from other human beings? Well, again, that's a good discovery question because it can be answered from at least two answers in the lesson. That's a good thing to remember, incidentally, that the discovery question, it should be possible to answer that from at least two of the answers in the lesson. Or if it's a different type of study, that the discovery question has several possible answers, not just one. Usually the understanding questions refer to just one, a particular point, or to one verse. But the discovery one can be answered from several. One good way to do this, incidentally, is to give some headings. Like, the first heading here is his humanity. Who is Jesus Christ? His humanity. Well, if you can turn that heading into a question, it's made for you. How is Jesus like other human beings? Who does that? Or looking on a little to about question 14, there's divine characteristics. The question I asked, which of his divine characteristics most impressed you? Let's just turn the heading into a question, and it can be answered from several different lesson answers. How is Jesus different from other human beings? That's question two. It can be answered from questions 8 to 9. And, of course, there wouldn't be too much discovery there. There's only about two possible answers. But the understanding questions can be quite significant. What is the difference between temptation and sin? Somebody may just have written down, he did not sin, for the answer to question 8. Well, what's the difference between temptation and sin? That's a relevant and necessary question. And then another one I've used, and I enjoy asking, is how does his sinlessness affect his teaching? Because in question 9, Jesus challenged the Jews to show that he was guilty of sin, but this was in the context of the authority of his teaching. And Jesus was clearly saying here that because he was sinless, his teaching had very considerable authority. But it would have been easy just to answer that question without thinking through on that. So the understanding question would cause people to think through more deeply into what they've written down. And it would be the same with the third question there. What statements indicate that Jesus was considered to be God? Well, there are several that people could reply from. I think the one that impresses me most personally is in question 13, where Thomas, when he saw the risen Christ, just said, "My Lord and my God," and how he instantly came from disbelief and doubt to a living faith in the risen Christ. And so there are, what is the significance of Thomas' response? It's a pretty good understanding question when somebody mentions that. Then the fourth question, which of his divine characteristics most impressed you? Well, there are going to be different answers. Questions 14 through the end, divine characteristics of Christ, and people are going to be impressed by different aspects of his deity. And there could usually be a very rich discussion on that. Somebody would mention question 15 that that he was impressed by the fact that Christ had all authority in heaven and on earth. And so my understanding question would be, I wouldn't put it just to him, suppose somebody down here said, well, I'm impressed by the fact that Christ has all authority in heaven and on earth. Then I would throw in an understanding question to the group. Well, what can Jesus have authority over in heaven? Or maybe what can Jesus have authority over on earth? Not just to the individual who made the reply. And somebody would make a comment, well, and then I would say, well, what does somebody else think? Keep it going for a bit, then summarize it, then go back. Well, who was impressed by another divine characteristic of Christ? And throwing it back into the group again on the discovery phase. Suppose somebody mentioned question 18. Let's have somebody read out what they've put down for that answer, for question 18.
To give life.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody write anything else or anything differently? Yes?
To give men life in all its fullness.
To give men life in all its fullness. Did anybody write anything else? To give abundant life, yes. Okay, so suppose I've asked the question, which of Christ's characteristics most impressed you? Well, somebody replies, well, that Jesus came to give life or to give abundant life. My understanding question would be to the group, what do you understand by this term abundant life? It's easy to write it down. Let's throw it into this large group here. What do you understand by the term abundant life?
Meaningful.
Okay, a meaningful life. What does somebody else think? More than we can want, meaningful. What else does abundant life mean?
Creative.
Purposeful. What does somebody else think? A fulfilled life. Okay, so there have been... Yes?
Positive instead of negative.
What else does abundant life mean? A life with direction. And somebody here said fruitful. Yes? Fruitful. What else does abundant life mean? Yes?
Having your cake and eating it too.
Sorry, come again?
Having your cake and eating it too.
Not dating and still getting married. Somebody, I remember the last time I discussed this study, I threw this question out, and somebody came up with a reply in its context. The passage says, the thief comes only to steal, to kill and destroy. I came that they may have life, and they have it abundantly. And this person said, well, I see that abundant life is the very opposite of what Satan came to do. Satan came to steal, kill and destroy. Jesus came to preserve, enrich and perpetuate. Well, that just blew my mind that somebody had that insight. I mean, I'd never seen it. That just shows how asking questions to the group does something for you as well. It means you get taught as well as teaching. But, you see, under that discovery question, what do you understand by the term abundant life? We drew out many things there. That it was a life of accomplishment, that it was meaningful, that it was satisfying, that it gave a real reason for living, that it's fruitful, that it's overflowing, and I'm sure there were other things. Incidentally, I just summarized then. I don't know, probably it's still seeming a little complicated, but once you sort of grasp the principle of discovery, understanding, application, launch, guide, and summarize, and it takes a bit of practice. It can liberate you in leading Bible studies. Discovery, understanding, application, then launch, guide, and summarize under each phase. So, discovery questions are to focus before the whole group what the members have discovered individually. Understanding questions are to help the group to understand more fully the meaning and relationships of the truths discovered. And in preparing understanding questions, it's a good thing to ask yourself what words and phrases may not be clearly understood. And are there any helpful contrasts or relationships that emerge as you meditate on the lesson? I don't have a question of that sort here, but you could have, well, how does this truth relate to that truth? That would be a discovery, an understanding question. Then application launching questions are to stimulate and to assist the group to remember to use or to do certain things which they've discovered. In this study, of course, question 21, the final question, is an application question. There are two ways of dealing with the application phase. One is to wait right to the end, and I do it both ways. I'm not sure which is the best. Is to wait right to the end and ask the group to read round, just in a circle, what they've written down for question 21. So suppose we've done that. Review the questions and your answers in this lesson carefully. What new things have you learnt about Jesus Christ and who he is through your study? So somebody writes down maybe a comment on abundant life. Well, I've learned that Jesus has come to give life a new meaning, to give us abundant life. So suppose we go around in a circle and somebody here has read that out. I might ask that person directly, well, what can you do to help you to remember that truth? Maybe I wouldn't. It would depend on how well I knew the group. But we go around in a circle, just reading out what people have written down for question 21. That's not really a very personal application question. That's because it's the first in a study series. There are three studies in this series. Then there are six books of three studies each. And as you get further into it, the application question at the end becomes much more personal and challenging. I've put another couple of application questions here. How does Jesus Christ being human affect us today? Now, I think in most discussions, I would ask that right up at the top there under question one. We'd discuss how is Jesus like other human beings. Then we'd try and understand some of the significance in those four areas and maybe understand other aspects of his humanity. And then after we'd done that, I think I would ask, well, how does Jesus Christ being human affect us today? Put the application question in as it occurs in the discussion. You have the choice of putting it in there or doing it at the end. Maybe it's best, though, to put it in during the discussion. And then, how does Jesus Christ being God affect us today? I might leave that to the end because that's where it occurs in the study. The final part of the study is on the deity of Christ. But it's important for us to all the time be majoring on the application phase so that people in the studies get to think naturally in terms of applying God's word. During the opening phase here, it can be quite helpful to ask around the group, well, how's your application that you wrote out last week been of help to you during this week? Maybe they've forgotten what they wrote down for an application last week. Usually most people have. But by asking that question, they know you're probably going to ask it again next week. So that just stimulates them to think a little on their application. And that takes a little time. It's a good thing to do, to ask around the group at the beginning of the study, under the opening phase, how did last week's application work out during the week. And sometimes there's some very rich things that get shared. And then during the closing phase, it's helpful to pray over the applications that they've written down for the present week, for the current week. There are two ways you can do that. You could just pray generally, or else, if it wouldn't embarrass them and the group know one another, you could get them to pray for the person beside them concerning their application. That's really a good thing to do. To get the, maybe there's eight people, just to get each person to pray for the person on their left concerning the application that they've written down. So we need to major on this application phase. Okay, now I'm just going to review a little what we've covered this morning. The first discovery, or the first summary of discovery question, which I would have launched in the discussion, was how was Jesus like other human beings? And so the first question has to be simple, easily remembered. How is Jesus like other human beings? Well, that's easily remembered, I think. And thoroughly planned in advance. Now, of course, you know what you were planning to ask, and the group don't. So you have to allow the group a little time to think, not to be embarrassed if they're silent for 20 or 30 seconds. That could seem an eternity to the leader. But to the group, you know, it's nothing at all. How is Jesus like other human beings? So you have to allow them just a little time to look through the study, to remind themselves of how he was like other human beings. That just takes a little patience at the beginning. And you feel that silence more than the group does. Allow them time to think. Then show them that you expect them to contribute, that you're not going to do most of the talking, that you're the discussion chairman rather than the teacher. That's another reason why you just have to keep a little bit silent during the first groups. If your first question doesn't stimulate any answer, you know, if that 20 or 30 seconds drags on, you have to ask them if they understood it. And if they just didn't understand the question, then simplify it. But there'll be no need to do that if you spend sufficient time thinking out your questions beforehand. Even for a study as simple as this, I find it normally takes me up to 40 minutes, sometimes longer, to think out the questions I'm going to ask. Because that's a very important part of the of the discussion. And next time we get together, we'll be spending some time on how to prepare questions. And then, of course, accept every contribution with appreciation. Even if somebody really blows it and gives totally the wrong answer, don't say, no, that's wrong. You know, just guide it. Well, what did somebody else find? And maybe as the group discuss it, the particular individual who's blown it and given the wrong answer will just find out that it was wrong by the discussion within the group, without you embarrassing him by saying, no, that's the wrong answer. And then you have to guide each phase with guiding questions. This is to encourage everybody to take part. Guiding questions that I use all the time are, what do others think? Or what does somebody else think? Does somebody have a different answer? Does anybody else want to add anything? Now that keeps throwing it back into the group, and you have to watch their faces to see who wants to come in next. And just a little tip, I found it important to keep my gaze moving around the group so that nobody feels they're on the hot seat. Right. Some of them were just off the cuff, so I may not be able to repeat them exactly as I shared them there. Now, what do others think? What does somebody else think? Does anybody else want to add something? Does someone have a different answer? And it's helpful to watch their faces to see who wants to come in next, because there are usually some shy members in a group who want to contribute, but they just need encouragement to come in. And just as you look around their faces, you can see somebody who's bursting to say something, but just hasn't quite got the courage to share it. So you can ask them by name if it's really apparent that that's what they want to do. Or another guiding question, verging on an understanding question. Maybe two people give different aspects of the same truth. You can ask, how are these things related to one another? I find the thing I have to keep constantly fighting in leading a discussion group is teaching them. Yeah, that's the easiest thing to do, is just for me to teach them, or to give lengthy responses to their comments instead of throwing it back into the group. Well, how are these two things related? What did somebody else discover? Or what do you understand by the term abundant life? You know, keep throwing it back in. Keep in the background, but keep in control. And avoid taking sides whenever possible. We also have to prevent anybody from becoming the teacher. In most groups, or in many groups, there's somebody who likes to teach. Usually it's a school teacher. They're generally the very worst to have in a discussion group, because, you know, they're used to teaching all day long. And school teachers usually have to be prevented from becoming the teacher. School teachers beware, incidentally, if there are some here. What did somebody else discover? You know, if somebody's been doing the talking, can cut that person out for a bit. But sometimes you have to take an individual aside afterwards and share with them that they're becoming the teacher, whereas really what we want to promote is a discussion with everybody contributing. And in guiding the discussion, we have to keep the discussion on the subject. If necessary, we have to comment on the fact that we've left the subject and that we should return to it. And we should continually be stimulating more thought and discussion by deeper questioning. We also need to be sensitive to the Holy Spirit as to what point he would have developed or applied more fully. I like to put down more questions than I'm ever going to ask, so that I am prepared for any contingency. Look at question 4 here. Which of his divine characteristics most impressed you? I can't think of a single study I've led where I've asked each of those understanding questions. I usually ask one or two of them. And usually the Spirit leads the group to major on one particular aspect of the study. Sometimes it's the humanity of Christ. Sometimes it's his sinlessness. Sometimes it's just one single little topic like abundant life, which obviously is where the group are interested and where the Holy Spirit is working. That's the advantage of having open questions that can be answered from any part of the study. It gives the Holy Spirit the freedom to direct the group to the point which he wants to develop more fully. And then we have to, not always, but usually summarize each phase of the discussion. This can be done very simply, just a sentence. But summarizing provides a useful bridge into the next discovery phase. It keeps the discussion moving ahead by providing a bridge onto the next launching question. And then in closing, I've already mentioned the advantage of praying over applications. Then assign the next study. That's pretty necessary. Next week we'll be doing Book 2, Chapter 1, The New Life, or whatever it is. And it might be helpful to emphasize answering questions in their own words when possible, and also in praying that the Holy Spirit will help them as they do the study. Ask if there are any questions about next time, then try and close on the appointed hour.